Coming up on Which Way Is Life, first off, thanks for being here. I appreciate it. The podcast designed to help you find a healthier, inspired life, episode number 41. My guest today, Rachel Hills, author of Sex Myth and How to Achieve the Sex Life That's Right for You. You want that, right? And we're going to help you get it because that's what we do. Try to give you the information so you can live a healthier life. And having a good sex life is certainly a part of that. Also, why societal norms just don't work when it comes to sex and sexuality, and how to start a conversation about intimacy with your partner. And if I could ask a quick favor, just hit the subscribe button wherever you listen to catch every episode. Which Way Is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/whichwayislife. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Which Way Is Life? Your roadmap to a healthier, inspired life. Bill talks with trendsetting doctors, fitness gurus, life coaches, celebrities, athletes, and other interesting experts to help you find the life you want to live. Get inspired, get healthy, reconnect with life. Here's Bill Klaproth.
Very happy to bring you Rachel Hills today. Rachel Hills is a sociologist, two-time TED speaker, and activist based in New York City. Her book, The Sex Myth, The Gap Between Our Fantasies and Reality, examines the invisible norms and unspoken assumptions that shape the way we talk about sexuality. An outspoken feminist and international journalist, Rachel's work has been published in more than 30 of the world's leading political and lifestyle publications, and her work aims to help people think critically and systematically about challenges that are typically framed as individual afflictions. And this year, she's developing a play based on her book, and it's called The Sex Myth, A Devised Play. Rachel, you've got a lot going on there. So happy to talk with you today. Can you first let us in on your personal life? Who are you when you're not saving the world?
Thank you so much for having me, Bill. I think I'm someone who cares really passionately about the power of stories and ideas to change the way that we feel about ourselves and the way that we treat others. So there are some stories that we tell that make us feel small and scared or inadequate or even cruel, while there are other stories that make us feel brave and kind and expansive. And my goal is to help people move from the first kind of story to the second. That's the belief that lies at the heart of my work, but it's also, because I'm a bit of a nerd, I think it also drives my life outside of my work as well. So when I'm not working, I'm talking about stories and ideas with my husband and with my friends. I might be going to community meetings where I think about how those principles can be applied to areas outside the ones I typically work in. Or I might be hosting dinners where people can talk about stories and ideas and so on.
Oh, we love stories, and that sounds like a rich, rewarding life, Rachel. That's really cool. So I like to start the show with what I call the one thing. Rachel, are you ready?
I am ready.
Can you quickly share with us one thing someone can do to improve their life today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the one thing that I would suggest that people do to improve their lives today is to stop fibbing about your sex life.
Stop fibbing. So what is the most common fib we do?
I think that we live in a culture that gives us this really narrow idea of what a good sex life should look like. We're told that it should be monogamous. We're told that it should be in a relationship. We're told that it should be really frequent and adventurous and have this kind of urgent desire behind it. And I think that because of that, when we're talking about sexuality with our friends or with people we might know casually, we often talk about it in really abstract terms. And we try to talk about it in a way that makes it look like our sex life aligns with what we've been told it should be, even though for most of us, our sex lives, you know, depart from that ideal in one way or another.
So when we fib, do we make our sex lives more grandiose, bigger than they are?
Generally, we like to make them look better. So say if you're a single person in your 20s, you might pretend that you're hooking up with people more often than you actually are in an attempt to make yourself look cooler or more desirable. or if you are a married person in your 50s, you might say that you are having sex more often with your spouse or with your partner than you are, because to suggest that you're not having sex often might be to imply that your relationship isn't, you know, you don't love each other as much as you should, even though, of course, there are many measures of how much we love our partners other than how often, you know, our genitals touch.
On the surface or above, we might be showing this, hey, look, we're cool, we got this going on, but underneath the surface, maybe not true. And then you also said something I thought was very interesting. You said we try to align our personal actions with our sex lives. So you're kind of saying that sex is basically not an activity of what we do, but a definition of who we are.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that is a story. You know, when I talked about stories that make us feel, you know, brave and kind and expansive versus those that make us feel small and scared and inadequate, I think this idea that sex is this, you know, reflection of who we are, and I think how we are valued by other people as well, that is something that leaves a lot of us feeling small and scared or inadequate, because our definitions of what a good sex life looks like are in some ways so grandiose.
So let's talk about that a little bit, how we value ourselves. And I think we value ourselves through the prism of our own sexuality, such as, you know, I'm not having sex enough. Is there something wrong with me? Or why do I feel guilty after sex? Am I a bad person or too promiscuous? Can you get into that a little bit more, that association with how we value ourselves through our sexuality?
Sure. Well, yeah, I think that we live in a society in which who we are, in which sexuality is very much treated as a symbol of who we are and how we are valued. And that manifests itself in all sorts of different ways. As you said, for some people, it might be this fear that they're not having sex often enough. So does that mean they're not desirable? Or I think for a lot of people, it's not just about how often you're having sex, but the type of sex you're having. And these pressures, you know, they go in kind of multiple different directions at once. So there may be many people who fear that they're not a good partner in bed because they, you know, aren't adventurous enough or aren't trying enough new things. I remember when I was researching my book, I came across an article in a women's mag that said that you should never have sex in the same position two times in a row. And it was kind of humorous to me because I imagined, you know, if you were trying to obey this rule, like keeping a database of which position or, you know, the acts that you engage in each time to make sure you didn't repeat them, to make sure that you were sufficiently interesting. But then, of course, on the flip side of that, there are still huge taboos about being kinky, for example, or about, you know, about wanting to try, say, BDSM, or about being attracted to people of more than one gender. So I think there's still a huge stigma attached to bisexuality in many communities, for example. And so, you know, on the one hand, you're told that you should be doing everything, but on the other hand, you're told that if you're doing the wrong kinds of things, you may be kind of morally suspect.
So there's a lot of perceptions out there, and I think what you're saying is when it comes to sex, there really should be no normal. We should all be able to create the sex lives we want, right? Isn't that what should be what's normal?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, normal is such an interesting word because, as I write about in the book, it has so many different definitions. Sometimes when we're talking about what's normal, we're talking about what is statistically most common. So, you know, what is the average number of sex partners, or when do most people lose their virginity? And obviously that is a concrete thing. You know, there are average numbers of sex partners and an average age at which people have sex for the first time. Sometimes we're talking about medical ideas of what's normal. So is something healthy or unhealthy? And this can differ both from a physical perspective, so something that is literally, you know, making you sick, versus from a psychological perspective, which might, you know, have more cultural values attached to it. But I think that often when people are talking about what's normal or what's not, what the question that we're really asking is, am I okay? And I think the message that I'm trying to communicate with my book and with my work is that there is a much broader swathe of what is okay than we're led to believe.
So if you want your sex to be vanilla or kinky, there is no right or wrong answer to that.
That's right, yeah.
So how do you be more truthful and vulnerable then if you're inside feeling inadequate or, gosh, I'm not living up to the way a normal sex life should be? How do you get to that point? Is it that simple of just recognizing it and moving forward? Do you have any tips for that?
Well, it is hard, isn't it? Because it's easy for me to say that, but it requires a level of personal bravery to do it, particularly if you're in an environment where everybody else is, you know, puffing up their metaphorical chests and pretending to have these perfect sex and relationship lives. I think that while, you know, in personal conversations that we have with people are the real arena in which this change is going to be made, or in which we have the power to make those changes, I think that in order to do that, we need to first feel a sense of comfort within ourselves, which is a large part of why I wrote my book. So if you're in a complete vacuum, it's hard to say you should step up and speak your truth. But I know that for me, something that's always been really useful is understanding how the beliefs that I have and the experiences that I have fit into a bigger picture. And I know that for a lot of people who've read my book who might have felt vulnerable or insecure about their sex lives for whatever reason, being able to read other people's stories and being able to understand how our values about what a good or bad sex life looks like have emerged through, you know, specific cultural stories or specific historical conditions is helpful, because it means that rather than those things being seen as this kind of overwhelming universal truth, they become stories. They become one frame of seeing the world rather than just the only way of seeing the world.
I'm just thinking, for the person that now might be listening to you and realizing this and going, okay, I'm not happy with my sex life, I want more of this or less of that, or I feel I need to get to this point, how do you share that with your partner then if you're in a relationship?
Yeah, and that is challenging for people as well, because it can be such a vulnerable thing. I think that it goes back to a sense of honesty more broadly in your relationship. So it's hard to be raw and vulnerable with your partner when it comes to a subject like sex, which is so incredibly loaded in our culture, if you're not already feeling comfortable to be honest with them in other arenas. So in terms of expressing if you're not happy with something in your sex life, one piece of advice I would give is to definitely start that conversation when you're not in a sexual scenario. So better to discuss it with them on the couch when you're talking after dinner, or in a less kind of volatile setting than it might be to, you know, be in the bedroom and complain and say, you know, I really don't think you're really very good in bed, or I wish we could do this because I'm so bored, or why are you pressuring me to do X, Y, or Z? But of course, if your partner is pressuring you to do things that you don't want to do, if that's the scenario that you're in, that is something that you should bring up in the moment.
So that's a good roadmap then. So if you're feeling a lack of something, or you're not happy with where you're at with the intimacy of you and your partner, sit down and just openly, and that's where you talk about the truth and being vulnerable. Tell the truth of how you're really feeling. I mean, you're in a vulnerable position because you don't know how that other person is going to act, but to get to where you want to be in your sex life, you really have to go through those steps, that truth and vulnerability, and then hopefully you'll be able to have that conversation and get there.
Yes. And I think that framing things in a sense of, you know, I feel, or I would like to try, rather than in a framework of blame, is a good way to approach that as well, because this is such a sensitive topic and something that people hold so close to their hearts and their sense of personal value.
Okay, so if you're listening to this right now, write those down. That's a great way to put it. So use I feel or I would like to try if it's something of sensitive nature.
Mm-hmm.
That is fantastic.
And it's actually on that front, if you're looking for ways to talk more openly about sex with your partner, there is a really great app that I found when I was researching the book.
Ooh,
called
yes.
Kindu. It's spelled K-I-N-D-U. And what I really like about that app is that it's a way that you can talk about things that you might want to try when it comes to sex, that without necessarily needing to have an awkward conversation with your partner. So instead of saying, I would like to try X or Y, you each fill out a survey, you're given a list of acts, and you can list if that's something that you find really appealing, maybe I'm open to trying it, or no, not appealing at all. And then you can look to see which points you match on, which can then open up a conversation about wanting to try something without a risk of rejection.
Very interesting. Maybe couples that are dating, too, should try this. You really get to know the person more intimately on a deeper level than just on the surface.
Absolutely.
It kind of is a gateway to those really important questions that you may be afraid to ask.
Exactly. And it's also, the app also covers a whole bunch of relationship and romance-oriented questions, as well as sexual questions. So on lists of things that you might want to try, I recall one of them was go on a road trip, which isn't a sex act per se, but might be something that you would find really thrilling as part of your relationship, or maybe not.
Mm-hmm. So there's benefit in that as well. So thanks for sharing that with us. That's really cool. So Rachel, you're making your book into a play. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. So I spend most of my time since the book has come out doing talks and workshops with groups around the U.S. And one of the people I met in the process of doing those talks was really inspired, and she decided to use the book as the basis for a play. And the play goes back to that point that I made at the beginning about giving people a platform through which to tell their own stories. So the play is a series of monologues written by the actors that are performing in it, and then a whole bunch of kind of connecting sketches and vignettes in which the actors explore together different ideas about how we're told sex is supposed to be. And it's a really powerful production because for the actors who are performing in it, they have to delve so deep into their own vulnerabilities and into their own preconceptions around sexuality. So they get this really amazing kind of internal transformative experience. But the fact that the performers are telling their own stories and the fact that the play is rewritten each time it's performed, for each time a new group of actors perform it, they tell a different set of stories, means that for the people in the audience, they're getting a set of stories that is really relevant to them and to their community. So right now, we're working on getting a big production of that up in New York City at the end of this summer. And we're also working on spreading that framework and that toolkit around the country, particularly to universities, to school groups, to activist communities, and so on. And we're launching a campaign around that on March the 1st.
Well, that is really exciting, and congratulations and good luck, because it sounds like it would be a great night or a great way to be entertained and informed at the same time. You would walk out of that performance really learning something or hearing stories from other people that could be very relatable to your own life or your own situation.
Absolutely, and I know that in the earliest performances of the play that happened last year, both men or women who attended would leave feeling this kind of sense of relief that they weren't alone, that mm-hmm. other people out there were struggling with the same questions or the same issues that they were. And they felt a greater sense of permission to stop fibbing about their own sex lives.
There you go. Well, that's important that a lot of people have that feeling. I'm alone. I'm the only person that feels this way, or I'm the only person that has this issue. And when you hear other people speak about that or hear about that, you start to feel like, gosh, I'm not alone. Maybe I'm not. Maybe there something isn't wrong with me. Maybe I am okay. So that's really an important discussion to have, and it's important to get those thoughts and those feelings out there.
Absolutely.
Well, coming up, we get the high five from Rachel. And if I could ask a quick favor, I have one simple goal for this podcast. I want people to walk away with something they've heard to improve their life, to make their life better, to have more meaning and joy in their life. So after the interview with Rachel, if you could, jump over to iTunes and rate and review the show. It'll take 30 seconds. If you really like what you're hearing from Rachel, if you could do that for me, I would really appreciate it. It would help us reach a wider audience and give us a chance to help more people. So if you could quick do that after the interview, I would appreciate it. The High Five with Rachel is next. Which Way is Life is brought to you by Audible.com. And just for listening to Which Way is Life, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check it out. So if you like listening to podcasts like this one, you're going to love Audible.com. So I would recommend you check it out and browse all the books you can download for free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/ and then type in Which Way is Life. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ Which Way is Life for your free audio book. Time for the high five with my guest today, Rachel Hills. Rachel, are you ready?
I hope so. I think so.
Question number one, what lit your spark and passion for feminism and the importance of sexual health?
That's a fantastic question. I think two things. So my passion for feminism came from books that I read when I was younger, particularly in my late teens, which sent this kind of rush of relief through me when I could see my own experiences and the things that I saw in the world about around me being reflected back on the page. And in terms of my passion for sexual health, that came out of experiences that I had myself, particularly in my early 20s, where sex was a subject in which I felt very vulnerable and very alone and like the only person out there who wasn't leading a perfect sex life. And so the realization that I was not alone in that was really exciting to me and felt like something that was worth researching and getting to understand better.
Well, that's very interesting. And there really is no perfect sex life, right? The perfect sex life is the right sex life for you.
Exactly. And that can look like so many different things.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, question number two then, what's your definition of a great sex life?
Ooh. I think a great sex life is one that makes you and whomever you're having sex with, which maybe no one at all, maybe you're having a great masturbation life. So it's one that makes you and whoever you're having sex with happy.
Oh, that's great. Question number three, when parents talk about the birds and bees with their kids, it seems like this information should be taught as well. What do you think about that? How could a parent talk about your book to a 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old?
Well, I think if they're in that age group, say 14 plus, probably the easiest thing to do would be to give them a right. copy of the book. Maybe right. read it yourself first to make sure that yeah. it's something you feel comfortable sharing with them. But I think with that age group, that's the easiest thing to do. With younger kids, I'm actually pregnant now myself, so I'm thinking about how I'm going to talk mm-hmm. about sex with my kid in the future. And I think that what I'm going to try to do is just have sexuality be something that is discussed casually over the dinner table through the child's entire life. And that doesn't mean getting explicit over the dinner table, but it just means showing that it's not a scary thing to talk about.
Right. Not making it taboo, just talking about it. Open
exactly,
and
I was going to say that it's not a big deal, but of course it is a big deal for a lot of people, and it was a big deal for me. And I don't think the issue is that, you know, people want to be careful with their sex lives. I think the issue is that we don't speak openly about it.
Right, and if you speak openly about it, you can speak openly in positive terms about it, which would foster a positive attitudes towards sex, and maybe people wouldn't grow up with hang-ups about it as much.
Exactly. That's my hope.
Okay. Question number four. Do you have a favorite book you can share with us? You talked about books that turned you on in question one. So give us a favorite book you can share with us.
Sure. So a few of the feminist books that I really love and that excited me when I was younger were books like The Beauty Myth by Naomi Wolf, which obviously inspired the title of my book, The Sex Myth. I also really loved The Whole Woman by Germaine Greer, although I'm not sure that that's aged so well 20 years later. And a recent feminist book that I thought was really great was Sex Object by Jessica Valenti, which if parents are looking for books to share with teenage girls in particular, say in that 14 to 17-year-old age group as well, I think that Sex Object alongside The Sex Myth would be a good book to give to a young woman that age.
That's terrific, and we're going to put links to those books on the show notes page at radiomd.com. So just find my podcast, and you're going to find all the information from Rachel right there. Question number 5, finish this sentence. Throughout my life, the most important thing I've learned is?
That life, hopefully if you're lucky, is something that unfolds over the long haul. I think that often we have a tendency to think of what's happening in our lives right now as being, you know, the condition that we're experiencing. So if I think about my sex life when I was younger and feeling like a loser and feeling inadequate because of that, I was looking at it only in terms of, you know, what my life was at 20 or 23. And I think that in the long haul, things tend to work out. Or similarly, a good piece of advice I was given from a mentor when I was younger, although I didn't really feel it at the time, was not to feel pressure to get everything done by 30. So I think whether it's sex or work or love or friendship, we often look at where we're at right now instead of understanding how the actions that we take today can contribute to where we are in the long haul. And in the end, good things can take a while to come to fruition.
How true is that? And I think we've all been there thinking the current moment we're in is going to define us for the rest of our lives, or I'm never going to get out of this situation, or this is never going to happen, when you're right, life unfolds slowly over many years. So put in those kind of terms, and that kind of helps you out. So
yeah,
great advice,
Rachel.
Time. Yep, that's true. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. And Rachel, how can we connect with you, learn more about your book and all that good stuff?
Sure. The best way to connect with me is to go to my website, which is www.thesexmyth.com, and there you can find out more about the book, about the events and workshops I do, about the play, and you can subscribe to my newsletter. Or if you'd like to connect with me on social media, I'm at Rachel Hills on Twitter, and on Instagram, I'm at Ms. Rachel Hills, or MS Rachel Hills.
Very cool. And congratulations on your pregnancy again. And thank you for spending time with us today, Rachel. And I'm going to leave you with a quote, one of my favorites, and I end all of my shows this way. And the quote is, enjoy the little things in life, because one day you will look back and realize they were the big things. Rachel, thank you again.
Thank you so much, Bill.
And thanks again, Rachel. That was so much fun. And I hope you got something out of that interview with Rachel. And remember to catch every episode of Which Way Is Life. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or my show page at radiomd.com. And again, if I could ask a favor, if you like that interview with Rachel, just jump over to iTunes, rate the podcast, review it, and that helps us reach a wider audience and gives us a chance to help more people. I would really appreciate that. Which Way Is Life is produced by radiomd.com, award-winning health podcast. I'd also like to thank my producer, Pamela Moore. I'm Bill Klaproth. You can find me at Which Way Is Life on Twitter and at Which Way Is Life on Facebook. You can also check out the show notes at radiomd.com for all of my episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.